We move immediately to the next speaker, Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis, who may not have been very widely known in the world, but certainly well known to people in INET, because he's been a regular at INET conferences. We've had the privilege of listening to him before. The privilege today is, of course, even greater because of his many commitments. We are grateful that you are here and look forward to your comments. I understand that you will be you have one of your colleagues from the Greek government with you, Mr. Euclid Sakalathos, who will make a few remarks supplementary to yours when you have spoken. But please keep within 12 minutes or so.
Okay. So I suspect the convention that Patrick has started has to be adhered to, so I'm standing up to. Well, thank you to INET once again. It's a pleasure to be part of this impressive effort to bring old thinking back in the form of new thinking, because there's no such thing as new ideas. We have to resuscitate things that once we knew better in the past and in a more confident past. But let's now move on to the subject of today. Eurozone institutions will be the beginning, the nail on which I try to hang some ideas concerning bank bailout negotiations in the context of dealing with the euro crisis. Now, we all know that the Eurozone was designed on the basis of what I like to call the principle of perfectly separable debts and perfectly separable banking systems. We designed a monetary union on the assumption that we can run monetary policy in an indivisible monetary union along the lines of making sure that every euro of public debt is assigned to one member state and that responsibility for supervising and possibly resolving banks falls within the limits of national sovereignty. Now, many of us expressed severe doubts as to the wisdom of this particular architecture designed back in the 1990s. The essence of this architecture is that to work, you need to have the banking sectors separate and at the same time unified in their capacity to recycle surpluses in what is essentially, by definition, an asymmetric monetary union. So once you have a country like Greece bound together monetarily with a country like Germany, you know that you're going to have a stubborn current account surplus deficit imbalance, which means that you're necessarily going to have the banks of Germany and the banks of Greece, the Bank of Holland and the banks of Ireland, and so on and so forth, recycling the financial surpluses caused by the persistent current account surpluses from the surplus countries through the banks of the surplus countries to the banks of the deficit countries. That we always knew. It's in the nature of the beast. Now, the problem with the asymmetrical aspect of it is that there are reasons why you have perpetual deficit imbalances. So I like to point out to some who take a leaf out of the standard macroeconomic textbook, which presumes perfect competition everywhere in order to come to certain general equilibrium theorems, that however low wages in Greece fall, Greek cars are not going to gain competitiveness vis-a-vis Mercedes, Benzes, and Volkswagens simply because we don't produce any. So when you have such asymmetries between economies like the Northern European ones, Germany, Holland, even Poland these days, whereby you have strong capital-intensive industries with a great deal of, market power, which is also linked to a degree of excess capacity. And then you have, in countries like Greece, a preponderance of non-tradable goods being produced, services, very low price cost margins, very low market power of companies, and you have a period of, shall I say, great moderation, or was it irrational exuberance? I think it was both, right? The great moderation part was the touching belief that Ben Bernanke so nicely captured with that term of riskless risk and a permanent state of reasonable growth with low inflation. That paradigm, touching belief gave rise to massive capital flows, an acceleration of the capital flows, which of course were due to the underlying imbalances that I just referred to. Now, when you have a massive capital influx into a country like Greece, I'm not going to mention Ireland because now I'm told that I'm not a professor anymore, I'm a minister, so I have to remain diplomatic. You have a massive capital influx into a country like Greece. It could take one or two forms. It could go straight into the coffers of banks that then lend it out to developers that then build roads and white elephants, Olympic venues and apartment blocks and office blocks, which then give rise to a phony Ponzi kind of growth based on the rise of asset values in the form of a standard bubble. Or it could take the form that it did take in my country. It went through the public sector. The public sector borrowed the money and then gave it to the developers. Well, it's just a question of the trajectory. The result is exactly the same. Now, the problem with such asymmetric unions, as we know from the gold standard era, is that they don't end well. At some point, there is a crash. The crash usually starts in Wall Street, for reasons that I think we all understand. It doesn't have to start from Wall Street. In the Asian Southeast Asian crisis of the late 1990s, it didn't start from there. It could have started from somewhere else. But independently of where it starts from, you're going to have a situation where, in this context, in this European gold standard that we created, the burden of adjustment after the burst is going to fall upon the weakest of shoulders. And the institutions that created that asymmetrical union then will have to come to terms with it. Then they have to deal with the situation. Now, we all know you don't have to be a left winger or a right winger. We all understand how difficult it is for complex institutions, especially ones that involve 19 nations, to do a mea culpa at the moment of the crisis, to admit to having created an architectural design that could have been much, much better. So usually what institutions do is they try to extend and pretend, just like bankers do at difficult times. So we had a major case of extend and pretend through what it was in the end a surreptitious transfer of potential and actual losses from the banking sector, from the asset banks, books of the banks, onto taxpayers. Our taxpayers in Greece, because we have a certain degree of malignancy when it comes to our tax system, happen to be the usual suspects, the ones who can't get away without paying. They were always overtaxed, simply because the tax base was so narrow, and they were asked to carry this sin, if you want, collective sin of our institutional failures in Europe, and in Greece in particular, of pretending that we have an illiquidity problem when in the end we had a series of insolvency difficulties. Now, it was always clear that the weak shoulders of those usual suspects that pay taxes in Greece would not be able to bear the burden of that adjustment, and those burdens would then shift onto other taxpayers in Europe in a way that is a solvent of the bonds of European solidarity, because you have one proud nation turning against the other, pointing moralizing fingers, which are not helping either with the dealing of the crisis or with the process of European integration, which should accelerate during the crisis. So in the United States of America in the 19th century, every major crisis led to, including the Civil War, led to further consolidation. Again, in the early part of the 20th century, the Fed was created as a result of such a crisis. Then in 1929, actually after 1929, 1933, with FDR and the New Deal, you had the creation of new institutions in response to the crisis that brought the whole thing closer together. And then again in the 1960s, the civil rights movement and even the Vietnam War led to further consolidation under the Great Society. So the big question for us here in Europe, since the word institution feels is prominent in the title, are we learning the lesson? Are we consolidating the Eurozone? Is this crisis a good opportunity that has been used in order to bring us closer together and to redesign the parts of the architecture which were ill-designed in the first place? Now, the official answer is that yes, we have been doing that. We have created new institutions. We have created the European Stability Mechanism that grew out of that special purpose vehicle called the EFSF. We've created a banking union. We now have a central bank that, after 2 years of struggling, of exceptionally valiant efforts by Mario Draghi, now it has the capacity to deal with, to address the deflationary forces raging across the continent by means of some kind of quantitative easing. Now, are we satisfied with these institutions? Personally speaking, I am not. The European Stability Mechanism was created, and yet there is a clear feel that, at least I get, that it was designed not to be used. And that it was also designed in a way that is so institutionally rigid that it can't be used even if we want to use it in the way that it should be used. In a sense, this institutional evolution has led to a degree of rigidity that comes along with the creation of that particular organization that in the end undoes, at least in the realm of perception, what needed to have been created. Let me give you a couple of particularly depressing examples of the way in which institutionally we have tried to accommodate the needs of banks and states within the existing framework of perfectly separable debts and perfectly separable banking sectors. Let me take you to to May of 2012, and then at the same, and also August of 2012, referring only to my country. There were these 2 months, May and August of 2012, were months during which the Greek state had to redeem bonds that the ECB had purchased under the S&P program, under the presidency of Mr. Trichet. The Greek state was not in a position to redeem these bonds. It was cut off the markets. And the program, which had already been instituted from 2010, was dormant. Negotiations were, as is often in our case, as it is the case today, underway. And during those negotiations, disbursements of the existing bailout funds had ceased. So this is what happened. The Greek state issued T-bills over and above certain limitations, which it sold, in inverted commas, to the Greek banks that were highly stressed, as we know, and therefore had to recapitalize later on. Of course, those T-bills were meant in order to be deposited with the National Bank of Greece, the Central Bank of Greece, under ELA, because at that time ECB financing had been suspended as a result of the problems in the negotiations. And of course, the Central Bank of Greece provided liquidity to the banks so that the banks could give the money to the state, so the state could pay the ECB off. Now, imagine that I had narrated this process in 1993 during the Maastricht Treaty discussions, that this is what we would have to do at a time of crisis. Dot, dot, dot. Tragically, we find ourselves today in a similar situation. As the Minister of Finance, I have, and this is a common secret, so I might as well share it with you, during these negotiations, in order to create the liquidity which is necessary to see these negotiations through, hopefully, to a sustainable solution, I have to make the same request that we are allowed to issue T-bills over and above a certain limit so as to create the liquidity necessary to see us through to the end of the month or the next month or June so as to be able to redeem payments to the former Troika, I should say, to the IMF in this case, but it could have been to the ECB. The ECB bond is coming, two bonds are maturing, just like they did in the summer of 2012. They are maturing in July and August. Need I say more? So the big question is, under the current institutional framework, and given the institutional changes that we have effected, can we pat ourselves on the back and say that we've learned the lessons of history, of economic history, of the last few years, that we have forged new institutions that have created the solidity which is necessary, firstly, to deal with legacy problems, with legacy debts and losses, and secondly, to avert future problems. I shall submit to you, and sit down, my very simple answer. No, we haven't. I do not believe that we have the moral right to pat ourselves on the back. I think we have much work to do. Thank you.